Now on Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Interurban Lofts proudly present The Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan.
Good morning, my neighbors!
It's showtime!
In the backfield, Allen zips it to Diggs on a slant, and it's a touchdown Buffalo, his third of the night. Stephon Diggs took what was like a 90 mile an hour fastball off his shoulder pad just south of the Essen Bills and into the end zone. All right, so second down and 13, the ball on the 38 yard line. Tannehill moving from left to right, looking to throw. Pass is intercepted by Matt Milano along the numbers of the near side. Inside the 20, the 15, the 10, into the end zone. A pick six for 39 yards. It's all Buffalo Bills. They lead it 40-7 here in the third quarter.
Off the right side of the shotgun quarterback, and that is Hurts, who gets the ball, fakes the handoff, drop back five, winds up, long pass, down the middle, he's got the receiver, that's a touchdown! Quez Watkins with an over-the-shoulder catch at the five, takes it in for six, and a 53-yard touchdown pass by Eagle quarterback Jalen Hurts to Quez Watkins. And the Eagles have gone up 13-0 early second quarter. Viking 26. The Eagle quarterback gets the shotgun snap. He fakes it, and then he runs it himself around the right side. 25, 20, far sideline, 15. A block at the 10. Cuts inside the 5. Pushes a pile. Drives. Scores! Hurts with a terrific run. 26-yard touchdown run. Magnificent.
We get it almost every night.
Good morning, Kansas City. Welcome to the Border Patrol for this Tuesday, September 20th, 2022. I am Nathan Buchanan, and this is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Wow. It's late September already. Tomorrow's the famous day from the wonderful song by Earth, Wind, and Fire about late September. And to think that it's almost going to be 100 degrees today in Kansas City is not quite befitting of the time of year, but it sounds like starting tomorrow we'll start getting weather that's a little more appropriate for this time of year. We got Todd Lebo with us. We got Marco Marquez running the show. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
Doing great, Nate. Doing great. I am ready for some actual fall weather, though. So, yeah. Let's bring it. Fast forward me a little bit here. It was warm yesterday. That's fine, though.
Yeah.
I guess it is what it is, you know.
I had to cancel Glowing Dragons practice yesterday because of the heat. Didn't expect to do that in mid-September.
No, so. Probably not. Gary Lezak will tell us why this is.
Yeah.
Actually, he probably can't tell you why the weather is what it is, but it just is what it is. And it's been warm. Unseasonably warm, but I look at the extended forecast and I'm very happy. It'll feel like fall for some Friday night lights for a bunch of high school kids around, and it'll be great on college campuses this weekend, it looks like. So that's good. That's what we're all about here.
Yeah, fall hits tomorrow, so here we go. Maybe enjoy one last day of summer if you want to look at it that way. We had a good day to enjoy last night, as you heard some highlights there, in a Monday Night Football. It wasn't really a doubleheader because both games, for a lot of the time, both games were going on at the same time, which I found a little interesting. But we had maybe the two best teams in their respective conferences playing last night. The Buffalo Bills dismantling the Tennessee Titans, who are 0-2, by the way, the one seed in the AFC from last year. And
how about that South, huh? They're good.
not looking good right now. And the Philadelphia Eagles throttling the Minnesota Vikings, who beat up Green Bay last weekend. So a couple of interesting results. And the takeaway that I saw from most people last night on social media that I think is a pretty reasonable one that most of us probably had to take away from was, boy, it sure looks like the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs are the two teams that everybody else will be chasing in the AFC, and the rest of the season's going to be a contest between those two to see which ones can, or which one is going to get to host the AFC championship game. But here's the thing. It's a long NFL season. And I bet you most times when you go back to week two in an NFL season and you take who do you think the two best teams are in a conference, and then you look at it again at the end of the season, and how often do you think those are still the two teams we're talking about?
Yeah, probably not often. I mean, last year and this year too. Remember the Packers last year scored 3 points in their opening game.
Yeah.
And then they were the one seed. Now they didn't go to the Super Bowl because the Packers do what the Packers do in the playoffs, but they were the one seed after being atrocious in week one, and they weren't very good week one this year, and then they won at home against the Bears. We'll see how they end up going. I think the Bills are curious, though, because what we saw last year from the Bills, I remember watching this, and I just looked the schedule back up. They lost to Pittsburgh at home week one, and Pittsburgh does that to people, right? Turnovers, yep. they get stuff done, and then they got hot. They were just destroying people. They came to Arrowhead, and they beat the Chiefs up real bad. Next week, they went down to Tennessee and they lost. It was a close game, but they lost. But I think they felt like I felt watching the game and watching them react to beating the Chiefs last year that they had won the Super Bowl or something. They had accomplished something last year in October. And then they kind of fell apart after that. They lost that one a couple weeks later. They lost to the Jags. They scored. Do you believe the Buffalo Bills scored 6 points in a football game last year? So they were capable of that. But what you hope as a Chiefs fan is they haven't matured and figured out that it's a 17-game season and you have to pace yourself and you go along the way and you don't get too many highs and too many lows, because that was an extreme high last night. They were home. They were so far what they've done is they beat the Super Bowl champ like a drum in their stadium, and they beat the one seed from last year who beat them in – and they did it at their place in front of 80,000 people or whatever that place holds now. And they did it in as bad as you see anyone get beat in the National Football League. So we hope as Chiefs fans that the Bills think they're too good and we'll have some slip-ups here along the way. But it looks to me like a team that has matured a lot and understands how to kind of go about their business. And we'll see if that can extend throughout the year, because they've got the red-hot Dolphins this week, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So that'll be something to watch.
That's got to be, without memorizing the entire schedule for this coming week, that's got to be the marquee matchup.
And it's a nooner, I believe.
Oh, boy. Let's go. Right off the bat. How about that?
Up against the Chiefs, I believe.
Well, we're going to be focusing on the Chiefs around here, but that's certainly going to be a game that everybody's going to want to monitor. I mean, look, I'll say it. Bills look like the best team in the NFL to me right now. I mean, again, it's only week two, so I'm not going to get too carried away with that because, again, the Chiefs didn't look anywhere near like the best team in the NFL last year at this time, right? It took them a good month or so before they started playing good football. So there's a long, long way to go in this thing, and we all would do very well to remember that and not just start anointing everything. But the Bills do have a track record. They've been building towards something. You do wonder if that devastating loss they suffered at the hands of the Chiefs last year will be one of those types of moments, like when the Chiefs suffered that devastating loss to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game the year before they won the Super Bowl, that caused them to go out and address their defense and make some changes. The Bills made some additions to their team this year that look to be paying off. So, Bills versus Dolphins at noon on next Sunday will be an interesting one. The other game, I had the Eagles on my DraftKings, Todd, which brought home a barely above .500 weekend for me. because, and honestly, a lot of it was just the conversations we had with both our guy, Adam Kaplan, and Jeff Chedia about how good this Eagles roster is. And I, you know, and I'm becoming more and more of a believer in Jalen Hurts, and I was not a massive believer in him when he started his NFL career, but he's one of those guys that just seems to continue to improve. And everything that you hear about him in terms of his work ethic and his attitude and his leadership ability made me start to believe in him a little bit more and more. And I think he's showing it. He's got a good roster that he's surrounded by. And it wasn't as much of a dominant performance as the Bills had over the Titans, but it was a dominant performance. I mean, I never really felt like the Vikings were in that game. That was just a solid dismantling of a Minnesota team that I think is actually pretty decent this year.
Yeah, you don't expect them to score 7 points in a game.
No, with the weapons that they've got. Of course, it was primetime Cousins, by the way.
Yes, it's not
man.
Great.
Oh, man, boy. I mean, that thing, I would tell you normally
the trends are silly, but that one's
that
real.
That type of trend, like there's not enough of a sample size, there's not enough, you know, correlation to equal causation or whatever. I'd be like,
well, when they came back and scored, and I'm at 7-7, I said, all right, we got to serve like a ball game here. And yeah, then it was just nothing. And I did not watch the second half because I was waking up early. So I went to sleep. And then I got up this morning, I checked my phone. I said, well, I literally didn't miss anything in the second half of that game because nobody scored. Nobody got anything. And the Eagles just were fine. They didn't seem like they wanted to go out and flex their Buffalo Bill muscle and just crush somebody. So they just got it done. And I think you're right about Hurts, man. He is he's improving as an NFL quarterback. He's clearly a leader. He's an unbelievable story. This is a guy who got pulled at Alabama out of the national championship game against Tua, or with against the Georgia, when and they put Tua in. That's when the legend of Tua began. He came back and he won the game. And you're like, wow, what a deal! You get pulled, and then he stuck around for a year and had to come in and save their bacon in the SEC title game, and blah blah blah.
And he
then
did
he
it.
Then he had to leave, and he went to Oklahoma, and you know, then he had to go not be a high draft pick. He was like a second or third round guy, right? He wasn't the first quarterback taken, and he's maybe in the right place with the right bunch of guys to be a good quarterback in this league and be a winning quarterback. I don't think he's going to put up Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, whoever, name the guy who's just going to throw a bunch and do it. But he does not care about contact. That long touchdown you heard Harlan call there was incredible because it's the National Football League. This isn't college where you're dragging, you know, some 18-year-old across the goal line or something like that. These guys are the real deal. They're the pros, and they're sitting there just trying to grab the football out. He's just barreling into the end zone. He's got to be beloved in Philly. Now, they got to go, you know, win playoff games or something like that, but because that is a tough place to be the coach or a quarterback. We've seen it chew up a lot of people. But they look pretty good, man. They look pretty good, and I don't know who the strongest team in the NFC is, but
right,
they might as well raise their hands and say, why not us, right?
Yeah, because you're right. That's the key, that the NFC just doesn't look to be on the same level that the AFC does, particularly when you look at the offenses in the AFC with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Justin Herbert and
Tua
now
and
throw Miami yeah in there with the weapons they've got. And I mean, so yeah, it's going to be a different race in the NFC. He was a mid to late, whatever you want to call it, second round pick. He was the 53rd overall pick, Jalen Hurts, for Philadelphia. Okay, we had some other news come out yesterday regarding the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about that as well. Willie Gay Jr. has been suspended 4 games. I'm going to go ahead and confess, that wasn't even on my radar until it came out yesterday. I don't know if you guys were expecting that or anticipating that that the suspension was going to be coming down, but as soon as I saw the news yesterday, it was like, oh, yeah. I remember when he got in that trouble last year, when he had that incident. Were you sitting around waiting for that to happen?
I wasn't, and because I remember, you know, we've asked Coach Reed if he thought anything was coming regarding Frank Clark. He's been asked that, but no one has even asked about anything coming from the league involving Willie Gay, because I think people thought it was pretty much done. He went through the court system. He has diversion, you know, all that stuff. And I think they figured, maybe that's not going to be anything. But the NFL can put, they can do their own punishments. It's not the criminal justice system. And this is a big blow for the Chiefs because Willie Gay has been a good performer. And this is 4 weeks without him on the field. It's 2 weeks without him in the facility. So, yeah, I did not see this coming, and it wasn't even something I was thinking about.
So, look, the one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to get into debating how long a suspension should be for what he did versus how long the suspension should be for, you know, what Deshaun Watson did. Every case is different. You know, there's a criminal element to this case. It's a civil case in the Deshaun Watson situation. The allegations are different. The legal ramifications behind the allegations are different. I'm not going to get on the NFL for cracking down on domestic violence situations. I'm just not. There's been public outcry for a long time that the NFL should do more about it. And if they're going to come down because somebody got into a legal situation this time around, a criminal situation involving domestic violence, I'm not going to gripe and moan about it because it happened to my team, okay? It happened. The league's trying to deal with it. And I think you just have to accept that and move on. That's my opinion. It's a big loss for the Chiefs on a football standpoint because I thought Willie Gay was one of the stars of the game against Los Angeles. He had 6 solo tackles in the game, 11 combined tackles, 2 for loss, 1 quarterback hit, and 2 passes defended. I thought he was incredible in terms of being in the right place at the right time. Yes, he missed a tackle in one situation where he came flying from 30 yards away at full speed at Austin Eckler, who just barely juked him and he went flying by. But other than that, he read almost every screen pass. He was constantly in the right position. Those were all things that obviously he had really struggled with earlier in his career because the athleticism and the physicality were not questions for Willie Gay Jr. So I think that that's a big loss. Now, Leo Chenal might get to play a little bit more. He has been playing a limited number of snaps and making some noise when he does play, but it's a whole different story if you got to play every snap. Maybe Elijah Lee, somebody like that, steps into the fold. It's going to be interesting to see how the Kansas City Chiefs have to replace him over the next 4 games. They're going to be out without him for 4 games. We will take a break. We've got more coming up straight ahead on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot.
No, listen, I mean, he stays in tune with everything, so he's pretty observant on things. And Pro Football Focus has done a nice job with their stats and their analysis. So I think they're pretty accurate with things. And, that's usable information. And if it drives you, it drives you. But it's also pretty real. So and that's what, you know, Mike Frazier deals and all of that. So he can tell you what's right and wrong. And he gives guys, he's also putting information out there too for us. So we do use it.
And there's Andy Reid on Patrick Mahomes and Pro Football Focus. I haven't seen, Todd, how did Pro Football Focus say that Patrick Mahomes did in the Chargers game?
I think they wait till the whole week, and I haven't looked yet. I know the disappointment came last week when he was eighth, I guess, or tied for eighth after throwing 5 touchdowns, and he mentioned it after the game because he got away with a couple passes, and he said, I'm sure Pro Football Focus will grade me down on that one. So he gets it. I mean, that was the question. Serena asked him, basically, does this guy put everything in a little bag and think about it and carry it around and like a burden? And I think he kind of does. I think we've seen enough evidence of that, that he brings things up in press conferences or, you know, counts on his hands, you know, when he's playing the Bears and stuff like that. So I think Patrick definitely uses things, which is fine, which is what Andy said. But he did mention that it's valuable information, the analytics and data that are out there. And doesn't matter how you use it. If you use it coaching or you use it for motivation, whatever works, man. Whatever works.
Yeah, I don't know that he carries it around as a burden as much as he does just using it for a little fuel. You know,
sure. You need something, right?
A little shot of Red Bull in the morning to get yourself going. And I think that's actually incredibly smart by all good athletes, especially ones that have accomplished a lot. You know, there's a lot of times you'll hear people say, well, what's that guy got to worry about? He's got guaranteed money for the rest of his life. This dude's got, you know, enough guaranteed money to take care of himself and everybody in his family 10 times over. He's already won a Super Bowl. So what is there to motivate him? Those guys find something, you know, and I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Hey, I didn't lay out the menu of the show today. And coming up in a matter of minutes, we're going to be talking with the hottest name in college football right now, maybe, Lance Leipold, the head football coach at Kansas. We'll find out maybe what he finds to motivate him when things are going well, when you're winning multiple national championships back to back to back. Does he have to find slights or anything like that? That'd be a good question for Lance Leipold. He's going to join us coming up next, and he's going to have to see if his quarterback can find a way to get that motivation when everybody's saying great things about you, because his quarterback is the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week this week, and not after his team played a chump, right? Like, after his team went on the road to a team that was supposed to be a top 25 team, he became the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week. And that just hadn't been happening in Kansas for quite some time. So we got a lot to talk about with Lance Leipold coming up on the show here in just a matter of minutes. Jamie Bluma will join us at 7 o'clock. We'll be able to talk Bluma-Palooza with him and, of course, maybe put the finishing touches on this Royal season. They open their last homestand of the year tonight. And I talked a little bit about the article with the pitching that The Athletic wrote and the response by Dayton Moore and all of that. So maybe we'll get Jamie's thoughts on that. Joe Valerio, Philadelphia guy, but Kansas City Chiefs guy. So he can talk with us about the Eagles' performance last night, the Bills, the Chiefs, where everything stacks up when it comes to the NFL. Gary Lezak will give us that forecast. It's a pivotal forecast, right? It's going to be hot today and then fall tomorrow, we think. So Gary will give us all the details on that. Mark Boerichter, we'll see if he's been fighting with any wide receivers on Twitter this week as he joins us at 8:05, and then Jeff Chedia at 9 o'clock. So we got a lot of great NFL guests and football in general coming your way, and that Lance Leipold name is just going to keep getting run out there right now, isn't it, as long as this Kansas football team keeps playing well, Todd?
For sure. Big one here this weekend. You know, they've got Duke at home. It's family day. And I was looking yesterday, you know, just kind of curiosity, on the KU Athletics website at tickets, right, to see kind of where and what was available. I think some people are buying some tickets. It's not just a mass of available seats. This could be a pretty good thing. I think people are taking notice in Lawrence, and they should. You know, you absolutely should. We talked about this yesterday. You can't beg someone to come out and support your team if you don't give them a reason to come out there. And the Kansas Jayhawks have 1,000% given people a reason to come over to Lawrence or to get out of their house in Lawrence and watch this football team. They absolutely have. It's going to be a fun day over there. It's just what everyone always wants to see, KU and Duke, right?
Hey, it's a tradition like no other. KU and Duke in football. We'll talk about that with Lance Leipold coming up next on the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. It is time for our weekly conversation with Kansas head football coach Lance Leipold, the head coach of the 3-0 Kansas Jayhawks, who are receiving votes in the top 25 and have another big non-conference game coming up this weekend. And they're saying that the new phrase these days, pack the booth. 11 a.m., Duke 3-0, Kansas 3-0. And we're joined by Lance Leipold now. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing fantastic as well, and we have so much to talk with you about. And before we get to all that, Todd and I were talking about something that I thought would be a great thing to bring up with you because you've got a perspective on this. We were talking about Patrick Mahomes and how he seems to find any little slight or perceived slight, And he uses that as motivation. He doesn't make a big deal out of it, but he'll bring it up. When he was drafted. You know, he had a couple quarterbacks go ahead of him, and we saw him count out the number of draft picks that he waited when he played against Mitch Trubisky. It was kind of a sign that, yeah, I know where I was drafted. Then the other day he brought up a grade from Pro Football Focus that said he didn't maybe play as well as everybody else thought he did. And we were talking about how, you know, when you're a player like him, or if you watch Michael Jordan's the documentary about The Last Dance, how he seemed to find some sort of perceived slight for any opponent he was playing against to use his motivation. When you're winning all the time, maybe you have to do that. Of course, you've won quite a bit. You had a Wisconsin Whitewater team that won national championships year after year after year. Do you do that? Do you have to find little things, little slights, or do you have to find a way to put a chip on your shoulder to keep going when you're winning? How do you maintain that edge through all the winning you've done in your career?
Well, you know, I think it depends on the moment and stuff, but I think everybody likes to have a hill to climb at certain times to stay motivated and to find a new challenge, some are easier to find than others, and whether it be personal or team and things like that. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't take that long, guys. By the time you get done with a game and get back on a plane and land and you know, have a short night's sleep and you're back in the office, you got to turn the page so quickly in a college football season to start preparation and you know, win or lose, to get on to the next one, to try to keep focus and to try to keep a, you know, a team that's experiencing a small amount of success focused on what we have to do. But I can see it, and you know, very much true is that you can sometimes have a small file of things either written or said or whatever it is that you can kind of keep as that little extra motivated, you know, juice when you need it.
We're talking to Coach Lance Leipold of the Kansas Jayhawks, and I'm imagining that you probably heard a lot of people over the last year plus say, you can't win at Kansas, you can't do this, you can't be 3-0, and you guys are, so you got to walk that little balance where you're exceeding expectations for people outside of your program, right? But you don't want your players to feel like, oh, well, we've arrived. We you know, won a couple of road games that hadn't happened here before. What's your coaching style like as you guys do what you want your team to do, which is win games, and what you expect them to do, because I know you were confident coming into this year, and to make sure they also stay with their feet on the ground and don't get too many pats on the back around campus?
That's a great question, Todd. That's the balance. But I think we even go back to last year when we were going through tough times, is that we talked about what our daily approach was going to be, what our daily expectations were going to be, how we were going to coach, how we were going to coach on game day, and the scoreboard wasn't going to matter. And when you go through those things of showing consistency of what you want from the time you walk in the building and in preparation and things like that, then you can emphasize it even more so when success does arise. Now, the next thing, again, is handling the outside. You know, you hear it many times, and you know, everybody's telling you how great it is all of a sudden, you know, and, you know, they're excited for you and all those things. You still got to be where your feet are at and go through that same routine. And hopefully those are part of the foundation of building blocks of having a program of consistency. And that's been our goal since day one. And you guys kind of alluded to it. And that's part of the reason why we took on this challenge, because people didn't think it could be done. And then once we get there, it's also going to have the components that will maintain its success down the road.
We're visiting with Lance Leipold, and I love the phrase, everybody loves a hill to climb. And maybe I've heard that before, but I don't remember it. So I'm writing it down in my notebook right now, Coach. And that, to me, is a little bit of a window into your mindset. And you also said you keep a little file of things that are written or said. I'm imagining that you might actually keep an actual literal file on that. Is there somewhere in Lance Leipold's file cabinet, like a file on motivation like that?
Yeah, there. I don't know if there's an actual file, but there's a few that have been highlighted through the times, and it can be good and it can be not good, You know, but if you, again, you can't make that hill such point that it becomes a more the focus than what has to be done. And you know, we're going to start meetings here in about 20 minutes, and we've got to find a way to get prepared for a good Duke team. So we spend too much time on the good or the hill and all those other things. We will become internally distracted as well, and that's where you hope you take everything, of course, through your career, the tough times and the successful times, and blend them together and keep this group motivated and exciting. Because the thing that's great is talked about is, you know, pack at the booth, and here we are 3-0. We got a great opportunity with 3 home games in a row for our fan base to come out and make a difference and support our guys who have worked really hard to this point.
Okay, we'll get to the stuff that you're talking about, because you keep bringing this conversation back to where the team is right now, and that's very deserved. But I find it all fascinating, the big picture stuff too. So one last question on that, if you'll allow it, and that is just your mindset on all this stuff. It's fun getting to talk to you on a regular basis and hear some of your philosophies on staying where your feet are and all those types of things. Was this something that was instilled in you, these values, as a kid through your parents, or was there some formative person along the way that helped you kind of see the world this way, or is it something you've just kind of accumulated as time went on? Where would you say the roots were in your overall approach to this whole concept that we're talking about right now?
I don't know. I'd probably still go back. It probably starts with my parents My dad, my parents were teachers. My dad was a coach and athletic director. Taught me to, stay humble as you can be, because things can change on you really quickly. And making sure, in this game, they'll change pretty quickly on you from one Saturday to the next. If not, then I even looked at my time as a head coach at Whitewater, had a really good staff of people that, again, kind of built that mindset. And from that, I always felt that, we were playing in the playoffs in Division III, and it was a 5-week playoff. Well, I'm in the world, okay, we're doing well here, but at the same time, our competition not in the playoffs is out recruiting for 5 weeks ahead of us. So someone's always working ahead of you, and you're all trying to stay ahead of the game. And I think that's that drive of, how are you going to maintain what you can do and not let your momentum slip away from you, and at the same time be humble and gracious about how you go about it?
Well, that's 24/7, 365 when you're coaching. We know that for sure. Lance Leipold from Kansas is on the line with us. And before we talk about Duke, I do want to touch a little bit on what happened in Houston. It can't be easy to have hail delays or rain delays and all that stuff and be on the road playing a quality team. Just take us through what that was like, having to deal with the delays and being down 14 points again, and the way you kind of fought back. And I know you never feel it's over till it's over, but it felt like it was over long before the clock struck zero. That was a long day you guys had down in Houston. Just take us through it a little bit and the kind of the bumps in the road along the way.
Yeah, it was a long day, and I need to clear one thing, because you're the second person that said it. I don't know where it said on TV. It never hailed during our game.
Okay, they said it on the TV.
Big rain. People, they must have, but it was big raindrops, but it never hailed. So we don't want to make the story any more dramatic.
Okay, good.
But yeah, the rain delay. All my years as whether it be head coach or coach, I've never been through a weather delay. So that was something new. But give Houston credit. We didn't get off to a good start, 3-0. They go down and score. They go down and score again. And, we've got to find a way to address that and coming out of the gates better. But the one good thing, it happened the week before, and our guys, once again, didn't flinch and didn't panic and found rhythm. And then through the delay, which every time lightning strikes, it goes back to another 30 minutes. And once we got to a point of where we thought it was going to start to break, we, gave our players 10 minutes to themselves, 10 minutes with the coaches, and then we had a chance to warm up for 10. I thought we took the field with a great mindset and energy. We were right in the red zone. We scored quickly, and I think those are things, those are small things, guys, that is really neat to see a program grow and gain confidence. And and to see us and then on the road be able to do those things, I think are things that we can't lose sight of giving our guys credit, but making sure that we continue to build on that once again as well.
It's amazing to me that you, as long as you've coached, you never had a weather delay like that before. That's incredible. And the team did come out and respond. One part of the offense, look, Jalen Daniels, we spoke with you about him last week. He's Big 12 Player of the Week. He continues to be amazing. But I want to ask you about the offensive line, Coach, because when I'm watching your games and you guys get into the red zone, I'm seeing some running lanes for your running backs where they're going into the end zone untouched, and Jalen Daniels is going into the end zone untouched. Could you just – I just want to give you a moment to talk about how that group has grown together. We talked with Brandon McAnderson yesterday about how it's a lot of the same guys that you started with last year. The growth of that unit, how impressed have you been, and maybe what stands out the most to you about the way that unit has grown?
Yeah, I think that group has done an outstanding job. They're kind of unsung in this whole thing, like most old linemen are. You know, Earl Bostic, our left tackle, has got, you know, we have, you know, their scouts in here, you know, 4 out of 5 days a week watching him. Mike Nowitzki at center is one of our captains. He's been very steady, been a great leader, you know, helped the guys learn the offense that we brought from Buffalo. Michael Ford also came from Buffalo. I think he's made great progress in year two. And one of the more improved players is Bryce Cabledew at the right tackle spot. And then the new addition and new starter is Dominic Cooney, a transfer from Central Missouri, who's been an outstanding player, highly consistent. You know, jumping a couple levels has not overwhelmed him in any way, shape, or form. And he's been probably the one thing that's helped really move that needle on that group. And then we look at what we have, you know, between Jalen, our backfield, how we're using our personnel groupings. And I think all our motions and shifts and other things that we're doing has taken a little pressure off that line, but also has made it schematically, I think, sometimes challenging for a defense. And I think that's what's helping create some of those big scenes that we're seeing.
All right, give us a little quick preview of Duke. They've got a new coaching staff, right? David Cutcliffe was there forever. What do you see about this team? I mean, they're undefeated as well. They're playing pretty well so far.
Yeah, Mike Elko's done an outstanding job in his first season. Obviously, he had spring to implement his system. They're executing at a high level. The scheme is very solid. They're fundamentally sound. Their quarterback is completing well over 70% of his passes. You can see them in a very good rhythm. You know, they beat a good Northwestern team but now has struggled since their opening win in Ireland over Nebraska. So they won there. They played Temple to open the season, and then North Carolina A&T. So undefeated, very confident. Last year, with a different staff, we went out there, played close for a half, and then they kind of pulled away on us by about a 3-score deficit, in the second half. So we've got to come out and be focused, be ready to go, and get ready to play even better than we have so far this year.
Well, Coach, it's been incredible to see your team off to the start that they're off to. I know everybody's excited about this big game on Saturday, and I'll say it for all the KU fans out there. This team deserves your support. You've been waiting for a team like this for a long, long time, for a game like this to come to Memorial Stadium in Lawrence, 2-3-0 teams on a beautiful Saturday in the fall. Get to the game. Support this team. They deserve it. Coach, we appreciate your time. Good luck on Saturday. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great, guys. Great to visit with you again. You guys have a great week, and look forward to again next week. Okay, Rock Chalk.
All right, that is Lance Leipold, and I just find that stuff fascinating. You know, anytime, it's one of the things. The longer I do this, Todd, the more I find myself just fascinated by what motivates the people that we see, the truly great coaches and winners that we see around us, and at all levels, right? Like we see them at Northwest Missouri State, we see them at K-State, at KU, at Missouri.
Or high schools.
High schools
all over,
here.
Yeah.
William Jewell, you know, and you get a chance to be around these competitors that just happen to achieve all the time. You're a fool if you don't ask them how they do it and what motivates them and what they use. So I hope people enjoyed hearing a little bit of that window into Lance Leipold and how he's gotten where he is, and big game coming up for Kansas on Saturday. We will take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. We had a Monday night doubleheader last night, and I find myself much bigger fan of the two analysts that were doing the game on the quote-unquote second crew for ESPN. The guys that lost, well, one of the guys that lost his job doing Monday Night Football, Lewis Riddick, I think, is one of the best. Troy Aikman, to me, doesn't offer nearly as much. But we got some real entertainment from Dan Orlovsky during the opening segment. I don't know if you were watching this live, Todd Lebo, when this happened, but here was Dan Orlovsky with his little pregame setup for what he was looking for in the game that night.
Now, the big change is the commitment to running the football.
Were you watching that live when it happened?
I was not watching it live.
Oh, God. I was watching it, and I just started giggling because I know he thought that was a recorded intro.
Oh, boy.
Sometimes, you know, because a lot of times they'll record intro, well, you know, in the television game broadcast business, you'll do an intro like that, and they'll tape it, and they'll decide whether or not you're going to use the one that's on tape or do it live. Or sometimes you run out of time.
Kind of depends on if the anthem is going to be happening.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things you got to do, yeah.
Or if you try to tape it a couple times and it doesn't work out, let's just go ahead and do it live. Some producers would prefer to do it live.
We'll do it live.
Yeah. He thought they were on tape. He sneezed, and then he mouth farted into the microphone. I think everybody's done the mouth fart into the microphone at some point when they're doing like a or recording something and they screwed up.
That's what Ben Messner is always rolling in our production room.
Oh,
better
man.
Watch the noises you make down there. They'll end up on Corey's cuts.
Or used to end up on Listener Lose.
1,000%
of the time.
Play
that one more time. I must have watched that 15 times yesterday because I just started giggling. I was like, I wonder how many people noticed.
Now, the big...
Now, we're sure that was a mouth fart.
I mean, that was right on the microphone, so
I don't think so. I don't think he took the lavalier microphone off or whatever and moved it.
That would have been a bad move.
You know, they're going to do... I read an article. They're going to do this like three times next year on Monday night to try to get capture, and they want people to watch ABC and ESPN and ESPN2 and all that stuff. So they're going to be some double Monday night games. And that doesn't bother me because if one of the games stinks, you got the other one.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're used to Sundays where you got a two TV or two screens set up, whether it's your iPad or a couple TVs going at the same time. We can keep track of more than one game at a time.
Absolutely.
We've proven that as a fan base, so I'm all for it. We'll take a break back to wrap things up on 38 The Spot right after this.